Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 142 for May 26th, 2009. Oops, I bought it. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/MacBreak. And by listeners like you. Thanks so much for your contribution. We couldn't do TWiT without it. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the show that covers all things Macintosh. iPhones, iPods, iTunes, I don't know. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen, from the Pixel Core, pixelcore.com and pixelcore.tv, the world's most exciting guild of multimedia artists and podcasts, Mr. Alex Lindsay.
Hello.
Wearing Hawaiian today.
I am. I feel like a bit of a turncoat, though.
Why is that?
Well, I just want to say for those of you watching that I just got this shirt. It was given to Leo.
It's not given to you. Well, it's lended to you.
It's lended to me. It's lended to me, and I'm a Steeler fan, and so for Steeler fans, it's very
difficult. Oh, it's a
Tennessee
Titans shirt.
I just want to say that Leo got the fishy shirt, and I got the Titan shirt.
I can get
Hawaiian
you another. We have other shirts.
But I'm a little embarrassed about the whole Titans thing. But, I mean, I don't have anything against the Titans. I'm just, you know, it's Steelers is kind of like a religion.
Steelers.
So I just want people to know.
How do you say Steelers in Pittsburgh?
Stullers.
Stullers.
In a sentence, it's used in, hey, you guys going down there, you know, so we're going to go see the Stullers. And, you know, maybe you'll see in the stands, maybe we'll go up there and see Mario Lemieux and you'll go, hey, Mario! That's usually how it
He
how
plays
it
for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Greatest hockey player ever.
After Wayne Gretzky. No?
No.
Bigger than Wayne?
I don't know if he
Bigger
has any
Bobby
records,
Hull?
But most people say if he had stayed healthy, he would have broken every record in the NHL.
That's what they say about me. If I'd stayed healthy, I might have had a career.
The guy
who's prompted all of this is Mr. Tommy Bahama himself, Scott Bourne, who we have just learned owns 313 Tommy Bahama shirts.
312. I get him on subscription, you know.
Yeah, you get him automatically, I understand. And he's got three closets specially built to house the collection.
Well, you know, I got to have something to do with my spare time.
I love it. Also here in his, by the way, that is a lovely shirt featuring Pina Coladas, a Tommy Bahama original.
Right there.
With the wooden buttons.
With wooden buttons. And that's how you tell that they're Tommy Bahama.
And as as Bush Williams says in our friend feed room, it's all about the wooden buttons.
That is it, Bubba. I like that guy.
Andy's buttons are not wooden. His noggin might be, but his buttons aren't. What are you wearing, Andy Anako, from the Chicago Sun-Times?
I was trying to find out exactly how to find out whose shirt this is without actually taking it off and appearing shirtless.
You have to do that graceful thing where you pull the shirt up over your head.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, to be fair, I really should at some point during a quiet part of the show just sort of slide off and then check the shirt, because it was actually a MacBreak Weekly listener who makes these shirts.
Oh.
Who was very pleased to put one in my hands. It's actually one of the handsomest colorful shirts I have.
Oh. Well, you and
Alex.
Wait a minute.
You got sent a Hawaiian shirt and not me.
I've lived the freelancer's dream. I can dress myself now completely from head to toe, shoes, socks, pants. Well, no underwear, but you know, shirt and everything, strictly from things that people have given me because they're readers or PR people.
So, isn't that nice?
Isn't that nice?
Well, because they also figure that, you know, you have such impeccable Aloha shirt fashion sense, Scott, that he would not want to take the risk of showing his own appearance. He knew that he could school me. I need
But
schooling.
What if he converted me? Would that not be a coup for his company?
That would be a hell of a coup for his company, which is why I'm going to make sure that I will do this off camera, of course, but I shall partially disrobe. I am shirted. I am wearing a shirt underneath this, of course. Also a free shirt that I got from
And I am wearing
I could get them to send like meat, bread, vegetables.
You're set. Dude, staples. Well, you know, exchange shirts for I exchange shirts for food. Although I'm not proud, I'll admit it.
Wait, did you pay for that shirt?
No, Tech TV paid for this shirt.
I see, so free shirt. Oh wait, and then
Scott
bought his
paid shirt.
Paid shirt.
I paid for my shirt.
and had to build a closet. These are, I believe,
you're pulling the you're going to be pulling the ethical cart for all four of us this show.
That's exactly right.
That's right. I'm going to pretend I'm Andy Anatko, ethical journalist today. I paid for my shirt. Tommy Bahama can't pay me off. Nope.
I am wearing grouper and mahi mahi today. By the way, it is appropriate for us to celebrate Hawaii because Roz Savage set off yesterday.
This thing is so freaking amazing that she can do this. I just do not understand where the will within that woman comes from.
I do. I've dealt with her.
Yeah?
She is a force of nature.
Wow.
Just Roz gets what Roz, and she's very sweet. She's the iron fist in the velvet glove, but Roz gets what Roz wants. This is what you have to do if you're going to be this row solo. And when I say solo, this is without chase craft, support craft of any kind. Solo. First across the Atlantic, then from Hawaii.
See, I always think that big boat would look like a big seal, and the big shark would be excited about it.
It's nice and silver, and it flashes through the water. She is a little worried about large fish, actually, sharks and stuff.
Does she see them?
Yeah, occasionally. She didn't see a lot from San Francisco to Hawaii, but she may see more from... Now she's going from Hawaii to Tuvalu. She's going to cross the equator. That's actually the big concern, because there are cross currents on the equator, and it's very difficult to get across the equator by hand. She's rowing.
She's rowing across the equator.
She's rowing. We talk to her every Thursday at 4:30
Eastern. How long is she going to be at sea?
She estimates about 100 days. It took her 100 days to get from San Francisco to Hawaii. You know what really is scary is that San Francisco to Hawaii, her water maker broke. Her backup water maker broke. She was drinking water out of... She had fortunately thought to put fresh water in as ballast. And she was drinking her ballast. And... she met up with a bunch of guys who were also crossing to Hawaii.
They were all rowing together
in a boat. No, they were in a motorboat called the junk boat. It was built entirely out of junk, including a old airplane fuselage and a bunch of plastic bottles to raise awareness of the Pacific garbage patch.
Right.
And they had water makers to spare, and she had food to spare. They were running out of food. It's not easy. Anyway, she's doing it again. Yeah, she's going to go to Tuvalu. We'll cover it. We'll have a live conversations with her via sat phone every
Very curious
Thursday.
About that. Like, how does she sleep?
Quite well, I imagine, after rowing for 14 hours.
But see, I wouldn't be able to sleep because I'd be afraid a big fish
She's
would
got
come
a compartment.
Eat me while
She's got a compartment, a hatch, a watertight compartment. So even
I watched a 14-hour Star Wars marathon over the weekend, and that put me right to
Did
sleep.
Did you really?
Yeah, I could watch 14 hours worth of like science fiction and Star Wars movies, and that's like the most ambitious thing I've done in my life compared to her.
See, I've decided now I'm a Star Trek. Alex is going to throw something at me. I'm a Star Trek fan. We enjoyed Star Trek.
I think I watch Star Trek more often than... I enjoy Star Trek a lot, especially the new movie. But always been a big Star Trek fan.
Yeah, I think I'm more of a Star Trek... I'm more of a Trekkie than I am a... what do you call a Star Wars fan? A
Star Wars fan.
Star Wars. Oh. Jar Jar.
You usually call them either a Jawa or a Stormtrooper.
Oh, the list is endless.
Uh-oh, we started
it. I was just scared to death I heard the word.
No, I was doing a Jawa.
Okay. Oh,
Scott actually had his head in his hands on that one.
We're going to have another conversation.
Is there a way to track how many people simultaneously tune out of the show at once?
Not anymore. We used to, when we were on Stickam, we'd have this number on the Stickam feed.
Just go.
And now I actually, we have an API though. What we really want to do is put a widget on the feed that shows a graph.
Right.
So it'd be like those turn people meters that they do in political campaigns, and you'll actually see it start to plummet. You know,
that's good. We force out the riffraff. That's what we want. We're delivering to advertisers, people of good sense, taste, and breeding, and money. It's these losers who can't appreciate Star Wars comic books that have no discretionary income. You know, they're here because, you know, what are they doing? They're waiting for a call from a guy so they can pick up a package at this place. That's why those other people are
We don't want them. No casual listeners. You must be fully engaged and sitting on an inflatable ball if you want to really be part of the show. So story number one, I don't know if this is a big story or not. North Carolina is providing special tax flavors for Apple.
Because they're going to spend $1 billion, not $1 million, $1 billion.
And potentially hire hundreds of North Carolinians for a server farm. But why is Apple building a server farm in North Carolina might be the question I would ask.
Well, I mean, a lot of these companies are building server farms
that's
all over
normal.
The place. I mean, that's that.
What does Apple need a server farm? .Mac, okay.
I mean, that's one thing. You know, the iTunes store has to be served up. The you know, there's a lot of heavy bandwidth stuff that they're already doing. I don't think it could be more video or something new, but it really could just be. It doesn't have to be. They have enough stuff that they have to deal with that building one huge server farm wouldn't necessarily not, you know, be out of the ordinary.
Well, in that case, no big deal.
Other than it's a lot, it's really good for North Carolina.
It's good for North Carolina.
It's a lot of X serves going in there.
Yeah, are there? I think Apple uses X serves, or probably they use commodity Windows machines.
I hear they get a good deal on the X serves.
I'm sorry, I couldn't resist. Other stories.
Well, I want to talk about the iPhone.
Oh, all right. You said you have a scooplet for us.
Well, I'll tell you this. I heard from a very reliable source something that kind of blew my mind. Now, back in the day, a couple years ago, when I was covering the iPhone and being mercilessly beaten up by Merlin Mann for doing it, I would occasionally mention a source. And the sources I had, they were always best back then, were at AT&T, not at Apple.
Right.
Because the people at Apple are so scared of losing their jobs, they know not to talk. But the people at AT&T were so giddy with excitement that they were calling me unsolicited and giving me info. Much of it turned out to be true. I had a conversation yesterday on Memorial Day with an extremely high-up Verizon employee who told me flat out they are getting an iPhone.
And the only real question, I mean, that's not surprising, but how soon is the question?
Well, this is the interesting part. He said June.
What?
He said as soon as June, it'll be announced.
This June. June 8th.
Now, he said announced.
Yeah,
the word he used was announced.
I think this WWDC may end up being a big, big keynote.
It'll obviously be a different kind of iPhone because it, you know, can't have a SIM chip in it.
It's got to be CDMA.
But
that's an easy thing to do. A lot of companies make both GSM and CDMA phones. I don't think that's hard.
But it would be a new phone.
CDMA gets better reception.
And Verizon has a much faster network than AT&T.
EVDO is. I know that GSM is supposed. I mean, the 3G is supposed to be as fast as the EVDO. And as someone who has an EVDO modem, it's not even close.
Well, Scott just bought a MiFi. We've got now all of us
are Verizon.
Are using
and
Verizon AT&T. EVDO.
Yep, and it's very fast. I just thought that was what was interesting about this was the way I came by the information. It was very similar to my experience with dealing with the AT&T people. It could, of course, be bogus, but I really believe in my heart that this guy believes that they're getting an iPhone. And I then just confirmed it with a second source, not nearly as high up in the company, who said, yes, they had been told by marketing people to prepare for it. Now, this brings about a couple of interesting things. The first one is a chuckle, because I remember when the iPhone was announced, the Verizon people were dissing it as, oh, you don't need an iPhone. Yeah, we got everything that they got, you know, and now all of a sudden they're happy about it. That was my first thought. And the second thought is that if this happens, if you listen to the statements Cook made last week or a few weeks ago about the iPhone, he said we're going to stick with AT&T. He didn't say that in such a way that meant
exclusively. You know, we're going to stick with them.
Exactly. So
not going to abandon them.
What a coup if they've got AT&T and Verizon.
Well, look how well the phone is done with just AT&T. You put them with Verizon and AT&T. It's dominant.
I do have to say, if they get a Verizon phone, I'm so gone from AT&T.
Yeah, I think I probably would too.
I'll find out what it takes to get rid of it. I hate my AT&T reception.
Which is probably why AT&T will fight this tooth and nails. I mean, what are they going to offer? You know, it could be, I have to say, it could also be a negotiation strategy on Apple's part to get a better deal out of AT&T. I mean,
that's my second thought.
Well, I think, you know, the rumor was that Apple's first choice in the first place was Verizon. So
Verizon
in some ways, AT&T has given Apple the leverage to have another conversation with Verizon. But the Verizon network is so much more solid than the AT&T network. I mean, it's not even...
And Andy and I are going to take a bullet for all you guys because we're both getting pre's, right, Andy?
Looks like it.
Yep. Are you getting one from Sprint?
I'm getting one from Palm.
Maybe that was my mistake. I went to Sprint. I should contact Palm. That's a good idea because I'm willing to wait in line, but it's a Saturday and that's I have to do a radio.
Although I do have a Sprint EVDO modem on the friend. My friend has one plan. In which I swap two slices of pizza at our local pizza place for a week-long loan from time to time. And their speeds are very fast, very reliable. Even, again, on an Amtrak train, on the Northeast Corridor, I've never had any problems getting at least 3 bars from the source to destination. So Sprint is also a hell of a carrier.
I agree. I think they don't have the coverage that Verizon has, though.
Verizon does seem to be the coverage king. I'm not sure if they deliver the most reliable speed in every place they cover. But remember that when you're doing mobile broadband, all you care about is getting bars. All you care about is getting connectivity. Speed is a great bonus. But really, all you care about is to make sure that you can, if you're paying $60 a month, you will never be in a place in the United States where you cannot get coverage. Although when I get both the pre and if I still have my loan or MiFi, I'm going to make a little bit of trip up to Bellows Falls, Vermont. Because Vermont is like the land that time forgot in terms of GPS, in terms of a cell phone signal.
They don't even have iPhones up there because there's no AT&T.
Your iPhone spontaneously gets one of those little horn microphones and a crank on the side of it. As soon as you enter Verizon, hello, Sparky, this is Radar.
Central. Give me Sparky.
It's one of these things. El Malou, could you hang up the phone?
Yeah, exactly.
We gotta call and get
party line.
That.
Party line.
Seriously. If Verizon gets better coverage in Vermont than most of the other phones that and data plans I've tried, I think that'll be a slam dunk for Verizon. You will hear me talking about this everywhere.
I'm told that Vermont now does have the iPhone, so there's a big victory for the nutmeg state.
Outlets? Three-prong power outlets?
No, sorry. No grounding. There's no grounding anywhere in Vermont. Now we're going to get letters from Vermontungians.
What's the syrup now? Blueberry harvest is down this summer.
Is Vermont the nutmeg state, by the way?
I don't know.
What is the nutmeg state?
I didn't know there was a nutmeg state.
Nutmeg state is Connecticut, isn't it?
Connecticut's a nutmeg state. I got to find out before we get those emails. I got to find out what Vermont is.
I love Vermont. Went in Vermont. Bellows Falls. You got the Connecticut River. You got the Miss Bellows Falls Diner.
Isn't that where Zuzu's petals were? You know, Bellows Falls, Vermont. Let's talk about, okay, so anyway, I guess iPhone, we could continue to talk about that a little bit because there are a number of iPhone rumors floating about.
I'm sorry, let me just clarify with Scott, though. Are your Verizon contacts saying that they are really close to getting it, they're in the running, or are they really certain they're going to be getting it?
Well, once again, he was a little bit cryptic, but he did say there was going to be an announcement that Verizon was getting their own. He said these words, I'm trying to get it exact. Their own iPhone, and the announcement was coming in June. That's what he said.
And by the way, Vermont is the Green Mountain State and home of Cabot Cheddar, which is the best cheddar
in
the world.
And a lot of maple syrup.
So Scott, that's interesting because that could indicate that if Apple tried to do like an iPhone Nano, this is a way to sort of wean the contract away from AT&T to simply say that, tell you what, the really cheap one, the one that we're going to charge $149 for is going to be Verizon. So that's one possibility, you think.
Absolutely. That would be a way to get around the contract. There's a lot of options there. And, of course, I'm hoping that, you know, from a purely selfish point of view, that it's the full-fledged iPhone so I can dump my AT&T iPhone. But I will be dumping my AT&T iPhone for a different reason than Alex. I get fine coverage. My problem is their billing practices are just horrible, in my opinion. So I'm looking forward to getting around those. But I have to have all these different cell phones. The only reason I have the AT&T is so that I can enjoy my iPhone. I'll dump that, but I've got Verizon everywhere else. Verizon even works at my cabin, which is 12 miles from the gate to Mount Rainier, which is about as wilderness as you can get.
Is there going to be an iPod or iPhone Nano? Is that that is one of the rumors? Isn't
I think
it?
It's reasonable to assume it's coming. In order to get the price point down to the place where they've already established that they can get the huge share of the smartphone market at the high price.
Yeah, why not just own that and why worry about the cheesy stuff?
Well, the only reason I think they might go down so low is just because there's so much profit. If they can get a similar agreement to what they had with AT&T where they're getting some comeback money on the monthly bill, I don't see how you can walk away from that, Leo, because your costs of goods sold at that point are almost zero.
Right.
Also, at some point, you run out of people to sell phones to. At some point, everybody who is capable of spending $200 to $300 on a smartphone has already made their choice. The people who have already made their choices of Blackberries and are not going to be moving away have made their choices. You have to start going after the people who will not spend $200 to $300 for a phone. I don't think it's so much of a case of getting an iPhone Nano so much as figuring out a way to sell something that can reasonably and rationally be called an iPhone for $99 or maybe.
I don't know. I'm gonna. I think that's the netbook strategy, and I don't see Apple going that.
Well, they
down
they
that
did
road.
They did the same thing with the iPods. You know, first you had iPods.
Yeah,
it was really
but
hard
iPod
to get into
iPod functionality
them.
Is very simple. An iPhone. The key to the iPhone is the functionality, is running the applications at reasonable speed, is reasonable performance. I think that this is a computer. This is not an iPod.
Right.
And so I don't. I'm gonna be the dissenting voice on this, not because I have any intelligence. I have no intelligence, but because it just doesn't seem to me to fit Apple's model.
No, I think it's more argument. Likely to see the MediaPad than it is to see a Nano.
Yeah.
I don't think we're gonna see any.
In other words, go up, not down.
Yeah, I think they'll go up before they'll go down.
I think it's a strong argument as well, Leo. Your point of view is also a strong argument. I mean, I'm one that believes Apple often makes the right decision when they stay at the high end. I just think that there's a lot of difference between making a price cut in a cell phone where, you know, it's just not as big a drop as it would be. Dropping a $1,200 MacBook to a $200 netbook would be a huge drop. Dropping a $299 phone to $159 isn't as far a leap. And I also think that, you know, Andy hit it on the head. You're going to run out of people eventually who can pay that amount.
Well, you don't need, if you broaden it to Verizon, if you broaden it to more carriers, you automatically, you don't run out of people till you get on all the carriers.
That's true. If you can broaden it to Verizon, then
that's huge.
Then you got to think about it. But I do wonder what sort of entanglements they have with AT&T when it comes to the contract on the original iPhone and their 5-year deal. And whether or not they can get out of that without doing something. One of the reasons I think that the smaller iPhone or the somehow, minimalized iPhone would be relevant would be that might be a way to get around the contract because they could say it's a whole new product.
Yeah. I think if you could do a performance-wise, a credible product and then at a lower price, okay. But what are you going to give up? You can't put a slower processor in. You can't...
You can. I mean, imagine already we're sort of speculating and hoping for like sort of a superset of the iPhone in the form of a tablet with everything bigger processors, more storage, bigger screen, all that other cool stuff, and a new class of software that's designed to run it. What if at the same time they said, oh, and by the way, we also want to help you make software not just for $700 devices, but for $99 devices. And now here is the new iPhone Slim. And here's the new screen size, has a lower processing footprint, and lower battery life. Smaller battery to take advantage of that sort of stuff. You could have a whole new class of widget-like software that's designed to run it. I mean, I'd actually be pretty interested in it if all they did was simply say that, oh, by the way, it works with dashboard widgets. Or if you've written a widget, it'll take you about 20 minutes to convert it so that it will work on the new iPhone Slim.
And you can do the visual voicemail and all the features that AT&T is giving them, presumably, yeah. Right?
Can we not call it the Slim, though? I mean, you know.
Slim sounds like a cowboy.
Slim is just, you know, those of us who are horizontally challenged, we may not appreciate the name Slim.
See, listen here, Slim.
Slim.
You know, when I was in the Army, I was called Tiny.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
That's kind of an insult.
Yeah.
Unless you were tiny.
Now, have you seen these next-gen iPhone specs that have been rumored out?
Well, we talked last week. Okay, what is the latest?
Latest is the, this is on Wired. And so it's 32 and 16, 199, 290. Is that the same ones that 3.2?
Remember last
camera?
Week, the one thing that we thought was not credable was FM transmitter. That kind of blew the whole rumor out of the water, if
you
ask me.
It could be a typo where it should be receiver. FM receiver would be
even
possible.
Even that's dumb. Who wants an FM radio in her phone?
That's the part I really don't get.
Yeah. I don't really think you want a transmitter or a receiver.
You can't have a transmitter.
And FM signal can be used for a lot more than just receiving actual FM, like, you know, stereo radio. It's also for communicating with nearby devices. Although I think that for me, the torpedo for this isn't that FM radio, you know, again, tuning in 89.9, the smooth jazz FM on Taunton, Massachusetts. Taunton,
hey,
Lowell.
I hung out with Earl Clue last night. Talk about smooth jazz.
My problem with it is that there are already so many radios inside that device as it is.
Right.
It's going to be an engineering problem to get another one in there that doesn't interfere with everything else.
The only reason that you'd have an FM transmitter is if you had a very, very, you know, low powered FM transmitter. That's how all of these interfaces work that allow you to hook to a car stereo. So if you just want to, if you want, and to me, I don't think it works very well. You know, I think that
you don't build that in. There's too many people like Griffin making those. What about Brian in the chat room says? What about traffic? Traffic info to add to your GPS.
Yeah, see that also works. Again, communications to exercise gear, exercise equipment, that also works. Again, if we're talking about audio transmission from the iPhone to someplace else, or from
but you could do all of those things with Bluetooth.
That's
couldn't
not
you?
It. Yeah, but Bluetooth is a hassle. You can't simply walk up to any random treadmill inside your exercise.
Yeah, you got
to
pair. Place. Yeah,
you have to pair it, then set it up, and then you call the guy over who looks better than you, and he has to walk. Not only is he better than you, the treadmill, but also understands the technology better than you. Russ FM is just
and he has a girlfriend, which I really hate. I'm sorry.
Well, thank you. I do have a girlfriend.
Oh, good. A better looking guy,
and he has a. I'm sorry. No, I don't.
I'm so sorry, Andy. So, I could see that. I think that, you know, as somebody who uses a Polar watch, which automatically bonds to whatever exercise equipment you're using, I could see the real value of that. I'd love, you know, I use an iFitness application. It's called iFitness. That I would love if it automatically knew how many miles I'd just run on the treadmill or how many, you know, I mean, that would be cool. So maybe that's an accessory FM. I could see
that. Yeah, but you hit it on the head. You know, how many radios can you pack into this thing before
there's phones with all of these radios. The Nokia N95 has all of those.
I know a bunch of the Nokias are about to come out with FM radios, and I know you can do it. I'm just saying, at what point does it become kind of crazy?
Right.
There's a certain level of backwards compatibility that Apple's not known for.
But this rumor, I should point out, says FM transmitter, which is the least interesting solution all around. So it just doesn't seem that credible to me. So that rumor, I think what else do we, let's not focus on rumors. Let's focus on using our noggins to think about what Apple might want to announce
more memory.
Keynote. Yeah. 32 for sure.
Yeah. I think that's a given.
Even a 64 would be great.
I think a given. I think that video is a given, you know,
taking
for the next
video,
version. Being able to record video.
Better cameras got to be in there.
Yeah.
I mean, I was at this concert. I was so bummed. I'm sitting, you know, 20 feet from Sting, and I can't get a decent picture because I'm on the iPhone.
Right.
You know, a decent camera would make a big difference.
I'm hearing 3.2 megapixel camera.
Yeah. I think that's kind of the standard. That's the minimum.
I think it should be the minimum.
You know where you get attention if you do a 5 megapixel or 7 megapixel.
See, I think Apple doesn't feel like they need to. You know, I think that Apple's like, you know, we'll give you a lot of the middle stuff because that's not, you know, we're not trying to outdo everybody on this.
It's all about the App Store. That's really what it's all about. And they've won that. There's nothing else, you know, can come close. Even the Pre, even if it's a better phone, is an uphill battle just because of the App Store.
Right.
What are they going to do?
I mean, I have to admit, if the video, if it was a more storage, if there was a better camera, that'd probably be enough for me to upgrade. You know, I don't think I would, and I think that's what Apple's looking for as a threshold.
But if it was a worse camera and they got you to Verizon, would you do it?
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
So that's what they're looking for, though. That's exactly what they're looking for, is how do we get people?
A man named Verizon burned down my grandpappy's ranch. You may be able to figure Verizon, but around here, that's a poison.
It's
name.
A bad name. I don't like it. Systar out of business, gone bankruptcy. Systar was the clone computing company. We have an Apple
Did
store
really
employee in the room, and he's cheering now. I guess he didn't like that a Systar thing.
Did he really think that? Did they really think that was going to work out?
You mean once they got... Well, I think they didn't know... I think that they thought maybe Apple wouldn't sue them.
No, I think what they thought is that Apple would simply say, tell you what, 10 MacBook Pros, you have one for each of you and all your friends, and you go away. I think that's...
Really?
I think that they're expecting to either be paid off. This is like one of those like slip and fall lawsuits where you know that if you get in front of a judge and a jury, they're never going to believe your story about, you know, how the supermarket is liable for your injury. But they know that, well, maybe they'll just give you $40,000 just to go away. I think that it's either that or this is a point that I've been making earlier, that maybe there is a larger, more respectable PC maker that's said, you know what, we want to start making Mac clones.
So let's
we can
try
do it
this.
Really cheaply. Yeah. But we can't simply put our reputation on the line. So let's invest in this company. Let's approach a couple people who have this sort of half-baked idea. And we'll say, you know what, we're going to be a majority investor in your venture. Also, you know what, if you get sued, guess what? We are your legal defense fund. We will pay for that. Because what they're trying to buy is a judgment that that outlines that Apple cannot prevent someone from making hardware that a legally purchased DVD of Mac OS can be installed upon. And that would be a very, very valuable judgment. That would be worth, if they cost them $500,000 to get Thystar up and running, that would have been dirt cheap. Those are the only two answers I can possibly come up with. I
mean, well, and Apple's come out with guns a-blazing, and that's it. So Thystar goes, okay, yeah. Fold our tent. Which, by the way, does suspend Apple's copyright suit. But once the bankruptcy protection, the Chapter 11 protection, is sorted out, according to CNET News, Erica Ogg writing, the copyright case can resume. So you can't.
So they've gone to the corner. Apple's sitting there waiting for them. As soon as they step back out into the ring, Apple's going to start pummeling.
And if I'm Apple, I come out with guns blazing. I don't want to have to worry about this. I want to put these guys out of business so nobody else gets this idea. Right? It's worth it.
That's the way Apple does all their legal actions, and I think it's. In my opinion, it's a valid way to do business because you don't want to have to spend time messing around with this stuff. If everybody understands, there will absolutely, positively, without any doubt, be cost in screwing around here. You know, it's sort of like the burglar. He sees 10 houses. One of them's got an alarm. He's going to pick one of the 9 that doesn't.
Right. It's, by the way, where we have a very large sign in front of the Twit Cottage that says we have an alarm.
And you know what, Leo? I've actually even got an alarm.
Well, I find the sign is more than enough. You could buy those.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not going to say, but one of my neighbors doesn't have an alarm, but does have a sign. She bought it on eBay. And she says the alarm is really not necessary if you have the sign, because what criminal is going to test to see if it's true?
See, what I prefer is you have the sign out front, and then on the back door, you say, or on the gate that goes into the back area, you have, you know, guard dog.
That's a good one.
And then you put right next to it, NRA. Insured by Smith & Wesson.
Smith & Wesson. Yeah. We're just an NRA member. NRA in good standing is probably good, too. Yeah,
exactly. I always like the nuclear sign.
I've got a sign that says, this house is owned by a freelance journalist.
That means there's nothing inside. It's like putting there's no radio in this car window that they do in your window.
And the other advantage is that oftentimes I'll come home and find that there's like used clothing, canned goods on the front step. You know, people are good. People out there are very, very kind-hearted, Leo.
We actually have some. Actually, I should go get these. Some listener of ours sent me rocks with hobo signs on them.
Rocks with hobo signs?
Yeah, you feel while I get them.
Well, you know, I've thought of rocks with hobo signs.
You know, I don't believe I've ever heard
that. Especially when sitting around on the streets of Petaluma, you know, oftentimes... I thought that might be useful. I might get a little spare change for lunch.
So these Terry Pike, who is summeract@gmail.com, makes hobo rocks. So this one is a red hobo. It's felt covered rock with that sign, and that sign means a beating awaits you here. So if you decide you don't want any hobos, Andy, you put this sign out front. A beating awaits you here. And then if you're feeling good. You know, maybe you got a check.
Free food.
Yeah. This is a little kitty cat. It says, a kind-hearted woman lives here. So.
do they actually make sure that they're having hobo education, though, so they know what is
the
what?
Hobos know? Yeah. Look at the hobo code chart. It's fairly lengthy.
What I want to do is buy some of the ones that say a kind-hearted lady lives here and put them in all my enemies' doorsteps.
I was about to say, is that like those fake kanji tattoos they have in the tattoo parlors where you think it means strength and fire? It actually means pork sausage served daily.
I love bacon. That's what your tattoo says, folks. I have no idea. I haven't spoken to a hobo and asked them if they still use the hobo code even.
I don't know if there are any hobos left.
Well, all you have to do is wander about 12 blocks in any direction in San Francisco, you'll find
one. Yeah, but those aren't hobos, technically.
What is a hobo?
Those are failed.com CEOs.
Yes. AKA hobos.
Those are not. They're not. They're not hobos.
So this is good. So some of these are hobo code chart. Some of these are owner is out.
Oh, that's a good one.
See, they're supposed to chalk these on the sidewalk.
Here's one. War chalking?
Yeah, it's like war chalking. In fact, that's where war chalking came from, is the hobo code.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this was used in the Great Depression. Here's one, Andy, you might want to put out in front. It's just put a circle in chalk on your sidewalk. It means nothing to be gained here. And actually, that's our motto for the show, I believe.
That's my logo. That's my logo for my column. Actually, that's my column photo now.
Nothing to be gained here. Anyway, thank you, Terry, for sending me hobo rocks. And today, should we put the cat out? Or should we, a beating awaits you here?
No, you have that upside down.
Oh, yeah.
You have the beating.
It looks like a Y. The beating awaits you here.
No, it's the other way.
It's upside down, it looks like a Y. Yeah. It's really supposed to be like this.
Which is funny because it's upside inverted down, because this one has it. It's like there's no way to get to where.
Oh, it's a backwards?
Yeah, it's backwards. Oh.
Can we have a special rat hole jingle for any time we discuss hobos?
Look at this. Wait a minute. I got to show you this. One of our visitors here. Can I say your name or is it secret? I won't say his name, but I am going to show you what he's got. He's got an iPhone app that is like a ticker, and he can he's typing messages to me right now on his ticker. I've never seen that. What's that app called? Banner.
I need that app.
So he says, ask John Hodgman about the hobo code, because of course, John. Isn't that a good app?
It's a great app.
Especially for those visiting us in the studio.
Hey, who needs a stinking teleprompter?
I've always wanted a ticker for the back of my car, so I can like communicate with the people that are like right behind me.
And what would you say to them, Alex?
Back the F off. Usually that's where it would be. Or your tank. Usually I don't have a problem with people behind me, though. It's usually the people in front of me that I need to communicate with.
Do you own a car now?
We got a car.
He does. He had to own a car. He lives in the
burbs.
We
had to break down. Now that we live out here, we got a Honda CRX.
We're in the burbs. You got to have a car.
With a GPS.
When did this happen?
Oh, it happened months ago.
I mean, now, did you bring the TomTom to the dealership and then install it?
No. I told Carlita. I didn't even look at the car. Carlita went to find the car. And she said, what should I get? I said, get whatever you want, but it has to have GPS built in.
Oh, very smart.
I said, I don't care what car you get. You can do whatever you want.
You got a CRV.
So she got a Honda CRV, and she thought I was being a little extravagant about the whole GPS thing. And within 2 days, she was like, I cannot believe we didn't have this built into a car before.
Oh, it's so great.
I wanted it built in because I didn't want my dad had a TomTom, I think, or a Garmin or whatever. And it was, you leave it on the dashboard, and it's a please break my window.
Oh yeah, you got to be very careful.
Having it built in just means that it's not that interesting.
Please break my window and my dashboard is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's not that useful when you pull it out. That's the problem.
Of all the years I've known you, Alex, I've never seen you drive a car. In fact, I often wonder if you had a driver's license.
I couldn't resist.
I still take the bus to San Francisco. It's mostly just too inefficient to spend that much time in a car when I could be sitting there working on my computer.
They got Wi-Fi in the.
Some of them, but I have the Verizon, I have my EVDO. So I sit on my Mac and I...
If you went in with your Wi-Fi, you'd be public, giving everybody Wi-Fi.
Hey, that's a good idea.
Hey, free Wi-Fi. Actually, charge them $5. You could amortize the whole thing. What about this rumor that there is a new iPod Nano? This sounds like... there's different rumors. So
Super Nano.
One rumor from iPod Lounge, now called iLounge because they got, sued. They say an iLounge, and I think these guys are very reliable. This is from our source. It's never been wrong. It is the biggest difference is the screen is widened to a 1.5:1 aspect ratio,
which makes a lot more sense.
Sure does. I mean, that Nano now has the same size screen as the old Nano, which means they just had a bunch of screens left over and now they've dumped them and now they can go to the widescreen. Otherwise, no big improvements, although. Another source says that there's an iPod Nano in the works with a camera. That's one you put in there, Alex Lindsay. That's Apple Insider.
I linked to it.
Yeah.
It looks like it's possible.
How many versions of the Nano do we really need?
Well, evidently it sells pretty well. I think that's the issue. So you want to, you see a lot of customization.
And a matte finish iPhone for China.
Because Chinese don't like the shiny ones?
Apparently. It's more scratch resistant. It's more robust. I would get one for my kid. He's trashed his iPhone.
Well, I would get Matt over shiny.
Shiny? Yeah, because Matt doesn't show scratches.
It's just cooler.
Is it?
I think it's cooler than shiny.
I want like a stealth iPhone that, you can't see on radar. That it fades out.
But
on radar.
What would be required is you'd have to have the REM coding, and then you'd also have to have it'd have to be all angular at different angles to distribute so it wouldn't be very round.
The iPhone Blackbird.
It'd look kind of like an F-117 except for an iPhone.
Yeah.
Well, the F-117s are not flying anymore, so there's a lot of REM coding and a lot of angular surfaces that are laying around.
Yeah,
so,
just lying around. That would be a good looking iPhone.
It would be a great
iPhone. If you could see it.
If you could, you wouldn't be able to find it. That's the problem. Yeah. You constantly lose
stealth phone. Yeah. Have you been following the eucalyptus story? This was the I felt so sorry for the developer on this one. This is a really kind of good looking ebook reader, although $10, a little spensy.
Yeah.
But eucalyptus was blocked from the iPhone store because
Kama Sutra.
You could search for and find the Kama Sutra.
Kama Sutra.
Give me a break.
Not because it came with the Kama Sutra. Isn't this a problem that, frankly, any ebook reader would have?
Yes. I mean, it makes you wonder about the whole the Kindle reader or the
I'm sure I could find
Stanza.
Dirty stuff on the Kindle.
Or Stanza.
Or Stanza. Anyway,
this is going to put the book burners out of business. You realize
it's
that.
Very frustrating.
The whole notion of book burning is in real trouble because otherwise.
Well, you know what? When you move all these books to an electronic age, you don't really have to burn them anymore. You just hit delete.
Delete them. Book deleters. Well, eucalyptus is in the store now. It does look really good. I just wish it weren't $10.
So this is the thing. This is where I think that Apple does a lot of stuff well, but this constant back and forth where stuff's in, then it's out, then it's in, then it's out, makes them look bad. Come on. Whoever's in charge of this, get your act together and pick something and stick with it.
They said that the eucalyptus author said that he had to recompile to make some changes so that Apple would be happy. And then Apple said, we're fans. We love it. We're very impressed. I mean, I don't know. Do we need another one? Is Stanza free? I think Stanza's free, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the problem.
Do we really need?
I think beyond whether Apple should have made it available or not, I think the uphill battle is you've got a good reader that's free.
Yeah, I mean, this guy seems really nice. The guy who Jamie, the guy who wrote this, I'm impressed by his blog. I mean, he's got some real skills with a Z. But why $10, Jamie? I mean, I think we should support him. I just don't think you're gonna. I mean, you could charge anything you want. I just don't think anybody was going to buy it for $10 with Stanza being free. Is it all for the page turn?
Yeah, obviously, I just don't know. When I saw the demo of it, I'm like, I really don't necessarily need a graphical page turn. I just need the pages to move when I want them to.
Right. In fact, I kind of don't like the graphical. Yeah.
It's difficult when you're competing in a market that has an app, two apps as good as Stanza and the Kindle Reader. You have to start off with, give me one good reason why I should use your app and not these other two.
Right.
And there are a couple other apps that do that by doing things that like what Eucalyptus does by simply saying, we are going to be so tightly integrated with Gutenberg and archive.org and all these other repositories of public domain books that it'll be just like you have an 80,000 book library right plugged into your iPhone. As far as I can see so far, Eucalyptus, at least the demo, doesn't do anything more than show what cool transitions they have and cool graphics they have. Now, I've yet to download it. I downloaded it, but I haven't tried it out yet. And I'm looking forward to seeing if that makes it a more usable experience. I mean, when you hit it has this guy has the freakiest URL ever. And I hope it's things made out of other things where th.blahblahblah.gs. Anyway, but he has a really powerful graphical demo of what this thing looks like when you're using it, which strikes me immediately as this either is going to be the coolest way to read books and that it's so tactile and so familiar in how I handle real books, or after the first day, it's going to get really old and I'm going to be like, oh, for God's sakes, just open the thing that I tapped and go to page one, please.
Jamie publishes on his blog a very good, he puts all the Apple emails, the back and forth that he had with Apple and so forth in his blog. It's worth reading. So, in effect, he was able to appeal. And by appealing, they were able to come up with a compromise and get it in there. And so, it does kind of highlight the basic problem with the iTunes Store, the iPhone App Store. But I think that ultimately they were able to reach a...
This is just going to be complicated for Apple. I mean, that's the issue.
We talk about this every week now.
Yeah, it's... But the question is, how do you where do you open it up?
Well, so what he did is he's manually blocking the Kama Sutra from...
That's it?
Yeah.
I mean, what,
and he
what
points out in this exchange that you can get... There are four different copies of the Kama Sutra you can get on the Kindle, Kindle application, and they charge for it.
Right.
Not to mention all the softcore porn that you can download.
Right.
What happened to San Francisco liberals?
Where are they? Well, they're in Cupertino. It's a little bit more. Oh,
okay.
It's a little
it's not more liberal in Cupertino.
More conservative down there, I guess.
I guess so. Anyway, Jamie Montgomery, his blog is blog.montgomery with an IE.net.
I think in the guidelines, as you say, if you can't imagine it being in a Pixar movie, you probably shouldn't write it.
Yeah, but look at all the things that are on here that you...
No, I'm just...
That really, that's a good way out. Any other stories we want to talk about before we get to our picks of the week? We talk about rumors. We talk about PsyStar. I don't know. Somebody bookmarked this on the Cult of the Mac page. Safari is a fat hog that spies on you. Porn mode doesn't work.
Porn mode doesn't work.
I like that. Just a word of warning.
I didn't realize there was... I never found the button that said porn mode.
I've been looking for that button for 6 years. Where is it?
Evidently, when you turn it on, everyone is naked.
Porn mode. That's Leander Kahaney. Go read his... that's link bait if ever I heard one. Here's some good news. CES, according to CNET, CES is going to expand the Apple section. That's good because with the move of Macworld to February, CES is wide open for Apple fans to go in January. And there's going to be an iLounge pavilion, an exhibition area for products related to the Mac, iPod, and iPhone. Also, a section for applications for use on Apple products. Usually, you don't see software at CES.
It almost feels like they're really going after Macworld.
They're going after the Macworld people. Yeah. 4,000 square foot space sold out within days of the announced availability.
Wow.
I think that's great. And, you know, I don't think that precludes appearing at Macworld Expo. Certainly, Macworld Expo is bigger than 4,000 square feet for one thing.
Absolutely.
But it is. It's kind of an interesting. I'm sorry. Whoa. It was 4,000 square feet last year. It is 25,000 square feet.
Oh, now that's
this
a different
year.
Horse altogether.
This is a huge play.
That's
getting pretty close to the North Hall. I mean, it's not.
That's big.
That's closing. That's like.
Well, that's 5,000 by 5.
I can tell you where I'm going to be that week now.
That would be a 5,000 foot long by 5 foot wide strip.
Good to know.
Or 250 by 100. 250 feet by 100 is probably
better.
No,
it's more than 250 feet by 100, is it? Is that
no,
it?
No, that's 25,000 square feet.
Well, that's not that big.
Well, it's almost a football field long and almost a
third of a football field.
Well, I mean, it's like a football field, which is about the size of the North Hall,
right.
Which is what Macworld. I mean, it's about the size
of
Macworld.
It's clearly a play. When you move from 4,000 square feet
to 25,000, then they said they sold it out.
They sold out the original, and that's when they expanded it.
But so here's the thing. I mean, people like me, I have that permanent hole in my schedule for years. And when they moved it, you know, I can't go now to the one in February. I'd like to, but so I have that hole in my schedule in January, so I'll go to Vegas now.
Well, let's do both. Why not? And I suppose we should cover both. I haven't been
to
CES in 3 or 4 years.
I can't be at the one.
That's right. You're double booked. Yeah.
I'm double booked, but I will be now. I wasn't going to go to CES. I haven't been in years, but I will go now because if there's going to be some Mac stuff there, that'll tone down the anti-Mac flavor of the event, and that'll be interesting.
I think it'll really depend. Usually, I start getting contacted by PR people about 4 months before CES. I think the tone and the tenor of the contacts that I get. At that time, from Mac people and from Apple companies, companies that make iPod and Mac stuff, is going to really teach me a lot about where people are moving. Because if this just becomes, well, we have to show somewhere, so I guess we'll show at CES, then that's kind of okay. But if it becomes, gee, we don't want to make this big buy in two big shows in January and February, so we were on notice, Mr. Anatko, that we are now doing our annual big thing at CES instead of Macworld. So it's interesting. I mean, we all know that the next year, we're not going to know how things are going to shake out until they actually shake up.
But right.
This is obviously a huge play on CES's part. They're not being quiet about this. They're saying, we want to be the new Macworld Expo.
Probably not unexpected either.
Not unexpected, but this is a pretty big
grab. That's a big one. We are going to be doing a full day at Macworld Expo. I'm going to be hosting Macworld Live, the big keynote that David Pogue used to do. Now he's doing the main keynote, so I'm going to.
And we are going to be shooting like crazy at Macworld Expo,
and we'll broadcast live all day there. In fact, I think we're going to do Twit there. We'll do Mac Break Weekly. Yeah. So it's
where's it going to be?
San Francisco at Moscone, the usual spot, North Hall.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. We really planned when we've been scaling up our coverage of Macworld every year. And, you know, we're just going to keep on scaling. We're excited about covering, you know, especially the, you know, all the vendors there and all the goings on.
Cool. It's exciting. That's exciting. Let's get to our picks of the week this week, and we will do that in just a moment. But first, I want to mention this show is brought to you by our friends at Audible.com. Audible.com/MacBreak, the place to go to get your audio entertainment. We're all Audible fans. We all listen to these great audio books. 50,000 plus in the store there. Just wonderful selection of fascinating, fun books. You can learn, you can be entertained. The readers are so great. And if you go there right now, you can get your first book free. If you go to audible.com/MacBreak, you could sign up for the gold plan. That's a one book a month plan. And that first book, that first credit is yours absolutely free. In fact, even if you decide not to stick around, you cancel at any time, you get to keep the book. That's one of the beauties of it. I don't want to put you on the spot, Andy. Do you have a book for us?
Yes, I do. The books that I read and the books that I listen to, I'm like anybody else. I pick them for a lot of different reasons. Sometimes it's because I know that I will deeply and profoundly enjoy it. Or I'll be entertained. But it's also very credible to read a book that you're reading the first chapter in the bookstore or the free sample via Kindle, and you're just getting so upset by what you're reading, or rather you're disagreeing with what the person is saying, and you're just thinking, oh man, that's, I understand your basic argument, but it's flawed here, here, and here. And your entertainment is not necessarily there on the page, but how you are reacting to it. The fact that it's making you think and making you try to order all kinds of thoughts that you've had in your head for a long time, but have never really had a chance to really put them together into one argument or to one opinion before. A while ago, we had a previous example of this with Richard Dawkins, The God Delusion, which I thought was pretty flawed and made a lot of Strymon arguments. But part of the fun of reading that book was just saying, oh, Dawkins, you are so full of it. Here are the eight reasons why you're full of it on this page alone. I've got a new one in that same vein. It's called Digital Barbarism, A Writer's Manifesto, by Mark Helprin. And it's a book about the evolution of what copyright means and what intellectual property rights have to mean in the digital age. The author is a best-selling novelist who wrote an op-ed piece, I believe, for the New York Times, basically complaining about the sense of entitlement that he perceived in a lot of people these days. That, well, you know, there is a movement these days to not just simply take copyright law back into control, because that's a big problem. The whole principle of copyright is that I, as an author, get exclusive rights to the work that I create and protected by the law for a certain amount of time. But at a certain point, that has to end, and that what I write gets released into the public domain where anybody can adapt it, anybody can modify it, anybody can sell it, anybody can translate it. And that whole system only works if that copyright term ends. And a lot of people are getting righteously upset that certain companies are using Congress to get those terms extended, then extended.
Disney. Mickey Mouse. Mickey Mouse.
to name but one. And but there are people who go off the deep end on the other side, too, saying, oh, well, copyrights are fascist. I don't know why people are creators are dinosaurs who don't understand that if I take your work and make 40,000 copies of it and give it away, that publicizes your work. And so if you want to start making T-shirts based on your work, you can now have a bigger market for that. Well, in my argument is that, well, maybe I don't want to be in the T-shirt selling business. Maybe I don't want to be in the public speaking business. Maybe I actually want to be in the business of writing novels that people then buy, or at least that I want to control the distribution of. Already you see how interesting that I find this book, because, again, you really want to start arguing against the narrator or with the narrator. These are the sort of issues that Mark Helprin gets into. Now, the reason why it becomes, I argue with my dashboard as I'm driving and listening to this, is that he really does take a really nonsensical attitude. You seem to get the impression that he does think that copyright should be extended indefinitely, that the fact that he created a certain work means that the public never has any right to get their own unrestricted access to it. That's something that I absolutely disagree with, as fervently as I disagree with people who think that there should be no copyright protection to begin with. It's the unabridged version. The original book is less than 300 pages, so the unabridged version is about 9 hours. Again,
what's it called? Give me the title.
It's called Digital Barbarism, A Writer's Manifesto. If you Google for that by Mark Helprin, and if you do a Google on that, you'll find a whole bunch of really interesting discussion about it. Lawrence Lessig, the perhaps the Pope of copyright reform, came up with a really nice essay on his site, Lessig.org, called The Solipsist and the Internet, which is just a long PDF that's a, well, not quite so long, but a very, very careful dissection of his this other author's point of view and where he's sort of making his bounders. And like I said, a book that you disagree with, but then provokes exactly the sort of discussion and debate, not only within yourself, but also in the world that's trying to figure out what we're going to be doing about copyrights in the future. I think it's a very, very valuable book. It's certainly a very, very entertaining book.
I've been told that there are now 60,000 titles total at Amazon, Audible.com.
Who records all those?
Somebody. They've asked me to record one. I have to pick a book.
Record.
You want to record? I'll talk to them. I have to pick a book. What do you? Yes, you too, Andy. You can do a book.
I want to record a book.
I want to record a book on weight loss.
It's like when Dr. Phil did that weight loss book. I thought, wait a minute, you're not that.
He's not exactly
thin.
A svelte guy, is he?
Yeah, I don't understand. Is this how to look like you? Do as I do.
I'm going to write
as I say, not as
book
I do.
On weight loss.
Yeah,
it's called. Eat less. A lot less and exercise a lot more.
I read that book. Good book. Audible, 60,000 titles at audible.com/MacBreak. We thank them so much for their support. They're a great company with great products, and they saved my life. When I drove down to the concert last night, I thought, how did I do this for 13 years? And then I remembered, I did it because I got audible.com.
No, I've been listening to Outliers, which is...
Oh, isn't that great? And he reads it so well, Malcolm Gladwell.
It's another one of the examples that I don't agree with everything. You know, that, you know, I kind of go, oh, I don't really know about that. But it's very thought-provoking. Oh, and it's great. It's the perfect thing to be, like, cleaning my house to. I just, like, you know, it's just, I'm just doing something and working on it. Or I'm walking here and listening to it. Yeah. And it's just a great thing to have going on in the background and have my mind doing something while I'm doing something else.
Audible.com/MacBreak. First one's free. You're going to get hooked. So I'm going to do my pick first.
Cool.
Because I'm playing it right now, and I really can't stop playing it. It's called Plants versus Zombies.
Uh-oh.
And my friends, this is the most addictive. It's kind of like tower defense. Yeah, it's not coming up on the screen there, Alex. You're just going to have to trust me on this. You are a gardener. And the zombies are coming in to your little garden, and you've got to defend it
right.
with plants, pea-shooting plants, zombie-eating plants, giant potatoes that block the zombies. And here they come. I'm going to put up my pea-shooter plant. Here comes a zombie. They move very slowly. That's the good news on this. And it's just totally addictive. It's from PopCap Game. You can download it. PopCap Games does the greatest stuff. You know, I mean, by the way, is Windows or Mac.
Okay, so it's not an iPhone game.
No, not yet. Although I imagine they'll do an iPhone game at some point. So let me put the pea shooter here. We can start shooting this zombie. There we go. He's not going to like that. But they're slow moving. That's deceptive, though, because eventually they start to move in on you. And there's a lot of them. I'm going to put up a giant potato and block this one. Anyway, I can't stop playing this thing. It is totally addictive. And by the way, Felicia Day, I blame her for this.
It's all her fault.
She was Twittering. She said, I can't stop playing this game. I thought, that's the kind of game I'm looking for.
See, that's the kind of game I'd try not to put on my computer.
You try not to play.
I mean, it's bad enough. Field Runners is still like, you know, I'm still...
This is like Field Runners, only with zombies and plants.
I know. I don't want to know. I don't want to know. I'm keeping my... No.
And it's not on your phone, though, so that's the good news.
I'm not listening.
And, you know, in a way, it's a little more of a complex game because you have to plant... You have to plant stuff that gives you the resources to defend yourself. So it's kind of a fun game in that respect.
A more fun and better game is actually the thing that I'm not looking for. Boring and something that I'll get tired of.
My wife
of as soon as
finally
possible.
Came out. It was about 11:30 at night, a couple of nights ago. She said, "You are a freak. Stop playing that game." I said, "One more round. Just one more round. I'm winning." You gain a big arsenal of stuff that you can use to fight against the zombies. So it's kind of, you know, there's it's more fun than the. And you're looking at me funny.
No,
it's
just,
more fun.
I know it's fun. That's why
than,
I'm scared.
Than tower defense.
I don't
that's
want.
Why
I don't
Alex
want anything
doesn't
more fun.
Hear it.
Field Runners is all the fun I can handle.
You can't really stop playing it. That's the only. Oh, here comes those zombies.
As our audience has well noticed by now.
Oh, okay. Now,
And the great thing is, this game was just tailor-made for radio and podcasting.
It has some good sounds.
It almost comes alive,
say,
doesn't
okay,
it?
Okay, so now look, this zombie is about to get my sunflower. You use the sunflowers to generate sun, which you need. And as soon as he gets my sunflower, he's going to get into my house. But fortunately, I have one last line of defense, a lawnmower, which is going to run him right down. And so ends Plants versus Zombies, my pick of the week.
Isn't that a Robert Plant song?
Oh, so it's 1995 is the...
$20, but you can download a level, you know, I think the first few levels. But don't, you know, don't, because you will have to pay for it. I mean, it really is that addictive. Stop looking at that, Alex. Put it away. Put away the zombies.
I hit the download button.
It's really compelling. Oh, and when you get the license, you can install it on 5 machines. So you really have it everywhere you want to be.
That way, everywhere you go, zombies will catch you.
Zombies. It's really fun. Alex, stop down. I'm going to do you a favor. What's your pick, Alex?
It's too late. It's already downloaded. It's already in the pipe.
It is really fun. It's whimsical.
Okay, I have two picks.
Yes.
So, because I always feel like there's so many iPhone apps and so many computer apps. And
there are so many.
So I'll keep them really short. The first one is one that I just saw, passing by in the news, and it's for the iPhone called Brushes. Have you seen this?
Well, yeah. You know why it's in the news.
It's because it's going to be used for the cover of
The New Yorker.
The New Yorker.
June 1st, New Yorker magazine. The entire cover is painted on an iPhone.
And I have to admit, I downloaded it. It is a lot of fun.
So is it just like a paint program?
It's like a little paint program. Yeah. So you can create a canvas, and you really can, draw. You can build different brushes. You can, it's quite a... You can build up density. You can, it's quite a drawing app, it's fun to doodle, this is a great, this is a high end doodle.
That's what Bob Weir sang last night at the
it's fun to doodle.
Concert. Oh no, Wang Dang Doodle. I'm sorry.
So anyway, it's a great little application.
Oops, I just bought it.
So this is what we do. You're listening to it. And we just buy everybody. We get everybody, what everyone orders.
I meant to click the link to show it.
You know, I do that
instead.
A lot.
I bought it.
Yeah, it's
they're gonna use that like as a pull quote on the site.
Oops, I bought it.
Oops, I bought it. Yeah, exactly. So Leo says, "Oops, I bought it." So anyway, if you're looking for something that has a little bit more control than the Etch-a-Sketch or little drawing, you really want.
But
something
can you with your finger really do great paintings?
They have some examples there that I'm assuming that they did. I can't get.
Well, look at that New Yorker cover. So right. Is the canvas larger than the phone? Is that why you can do the detail that they're
talking? I think it is, although I've been mostly working with I've been working with the area that
reminds me very much of Painter.
Yeah.
Stroke it recording does. Brushes now records your brush strokes so you can replay your paintings and export them at high resolutions using Brushes Viewer, a Mac OS X app. That's cool. You can zoom.
The New Yorker site actually has the video capture of that cover being produced. So.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I loved about it.
And clearly the guy is a real artist because you can see him working from back to front using the techniques that a real artist would work. But it is really impressive. A really cool thing to watch.
Wow. I'm going to have to go look at that. So that's just is it just like a QuickTime video on there?
I believe they have it as, it's streaming something.
Let me see if I can... find that. Where is it? I'd like to play it back just to see it.
Never mind. Don't worry about it. It's okay.
The one thing that happens is
I see it. Here it is.
You do have to move kind of slowly when you're making curves because you still get the kind of the polygonal look if you move too quickly.
We don't want a polygonal.
But if you're doing if you're acting like a artist with brushes, it actually works pretty well. So anyway, that's my iPhone app.
Do you think that the artist did this? For the New Yorker, and then they made a big deal out of it, or
I believe I recognize this guy's style. He's actually quite famous for doing iPhone paintings this way.
He says that he can do it because he can paint people without them knowing. It just looks like he's looking at his phone, so he can actually do illustrations that way, which I think is really clever. And looking at the video they show back, I mean, yeah, you definitely have the kinds of capabilities an artist would be looking for in an iPhone app. That's kind of amazing. Wow. I wonder if the plan... So in other words, you're saying that... But do you think they commissioned him because he's an iPhone painter?
I do not know.
They're very digital nowadays at the New Yorker.
When Art Spiegelman's took over a number of years ago, I mean, he is the cartoonist, so he's really... He's not in any way a traditionalist, so this is exactly the sort of thing you'd expect him to do.
He's responsible for their covers and art now?
Yep, that's why Plastic Man was on the cover a few years ago. That's why Seth is on the cover. That's why Chris Ware. I think Chris Ware was doing a couple of covers.
I love Art Spiegelman. I interviewed him when Mouse came out. He is just incredible. Just incredible. Very cool brushes. I just bought it.
Yeah, there you go.
I just bought it.
I just bought it. That's the new thumbs up from Leo. So
I'll be giving you my review.
And stand by for brushes 2, which will be available in 15 minutes.
Oops, I just bought it.
So my application's a little more expensive.
Oh, you have 2.
Yeah. I took a long time. I could save it.
I could do 2. Save it.
I'll save it.
Because I had 2, but I decided
to save
it.
Until next week. Next week I have a really good app that's just moved to the Mac. That I got a demo of and I like it a lot.
You know, mine is something that I'm going to use on the cruise for my presentations. It's the best thing I ever use
on
in
your
my
iPhone.
Life. No.
Do you have the iPhone controller?
Yes,
I love that for the quick keynote
teasing
iPhone
us.
Controller.
I'm such a tease. You, Scott Bourne. You're next.
Okay, there are many, many places online to get great information about using creative software. Lynda.com, you've heard me talk about in the past. We all know that you can get lots of great training, I mean really great training, from Pixel Core. But I've come upon a place over the last couple of months that I've been going to over and over called Kelby Training.
Oh, Scott Kelby.
Scott Kelby's deal. If you're a National Association of Photoshop Professionals member, and of course you should be if you use Photoshop, the price ends up being $17 a month.
That's good.
And if this is very Nikon and photography and Adobe centric, so that those are the titles. But if you're into those things, for $17 a month, I have to say there's a very wide variety of information here, and the Kelby folks are really doing things well. I have to, my hat's off to them, even though there's a place or two where we all compete. This is a place where they do a wonderful job. And, you know, I say that having my own training titles over at lynda.com.
That says quite a bit, actually, Scott, that you're recommending this.
Yeah, I have to say for $17 a month, you know, if you're into those areas. Now, lynda.com has a slightly broader variety of information available. But if you're into photography, particularly if you're into Nikon photography, because they've got Joe McNally, who's one of the hottest teachers on the planet right now. And if you're into Photoshop or anything Adobe, the best guys in the business are here. And the breadth of knowledge that they offer is quite shocking to me, frankly, that this level of information is available in this way. So I want to highly recommend it. You know, $17 if you're a Photoshop NAPP member, $19 a month, or $199 a year for everybody else.
Wow.
And that's at KelbyTraining.com. I also want to mention that I'm proud to have been asked by the folks there to lead one of their worldwide photo walks going on July 18th. And they've got more than 400 cities signed up. I'll be leading one in Portland. And that's going to be the world's largest ever combined photo walk.
Kind wow. Cool. I mean, largest in terms of the number of participants?
Yeah, because there's more than 400 cities and they limit each one to 50, assuming they all fill up.
Photo walks. Yeah. I want to do a photo walk with you.
Well, you're welcome to come up, even though technically we're sold out. I'll make a place.
You'd mock me.
I would not mock you.
You'd say, Laporte, take your lens cap off, you nitwit.
I would do that, but it wouldn't be mocking. It would be instructional. You're welcome to come to anything I'm at ever, and
I know
that.
You're a dear.
You make it sound as though like Scott runs these things like pro wrestling, where they have some guy in the role of the mook.
I'm the mook.
They have to like stand up on the turnbuckle and make a lot of problems.
I'm the mook. Hey, Mr. Mukanatko. Okay, so by the way, that's KelbyTraining.com. Thank you, Scott. Great pick.
You're welcome.
Mr. Anatko, your pick, sir.
I do have a pick, although, again, I blacked out the camera for a good 30 seconds, so I could verify that my shirt is provided with a lovely grant from the Hawaii Berra Shirt Foundation.
Yay. Laugh, Hawaii Berra, laugh, Hawaii Berra. May your fruit fly free.
Four pockets, removable collar stays, generous sizing, and casual but dressy box front design. Hawaii Berra, Beverly Hills, 60609.
You had me at generous styling.
Exactly. Again, it's definitely tailored, just like my internet pants. They're tailored for sitting and typing for long periods of time.
Excellent.
Something that I'm very, very grateful for.
Excellent.
But my pick of the week is a really cool DVD utility called Fairmount. It's free. It's open source. You can get it at metakine.com, M-E-T-A-K-I-N-E.com. Now, we all know that Handbrake is this really really awesome tool just for ripping commercial DVDs into QuickTime files, into MP4 files. However, what it can't do is... Fairmount does something very, very different, very, very simple. What it does is it works in tandem with the VLC media player. When you have these this software installed, anytime you insert a commercial DVD in the background, Fairmount will simply bamboozle the operating system into thinking that it's simply an unprotected, unlocked, plain vanilla DVD. And once that happens, that opens up a whole world of possibilities to you. Among them, you could simply burn a duplicate of that DVD without copy protection.
Oops, I just installed it. So
you can also do things like just simply copy the video directories directly onto your onto your 2 terabyte hard drive, and now instead of just having like the movie from Star Trek, you will have the movie and all the menus and all the special features and all the commentary tracks
player plays it, right? You don't
exactly.
need to,
yeah. you will have an exact duplicate of everything that's on that disc the way that it was meant to be presented. And now that you can get a terabyte worth of storage for $90, now why bother ripping discs when you can really reliably afford to have a couple hundred full DVDs on that drive? And like I said, it's just a really good resource. I've been using Elgato has their H.264 hardware accelerators, that little USB thingamabob that you plug in. And it offers hardware accelerated compression into H.264. What you can do now, because the software that this hardware thing provides with you doesn't rip commercial DVDs, but it can process those original video folders, so that if you use Fairmount to strip away the DVD stuff, the copy protection, now you can simply drag that folder into Elgato's application, and now you're getting DVD ripping at greatly accelerated rates, about 3 or 4 times faster than what Handbrake can give you.
So Fairmount doesn't really have any interface. It just runs in the background.
There's a window if you want to take a look at it. Really, all that happens is that when you insert it, you'll suddenly see a picture of a DVD with like lox and cream cheese being spread over it. And when the entire thing has been spread with cream cheese, you know that it's done, and it will mount that just as a regular DVD. Now it does have to do a whole bunch of math to crack the copy protection on this. So it's not as if you pop it in and 3 seconds later the DVD is available. But we're talking about minutes rather than hours. And again, given that it lets you do things with that DVD you couldn't do otherwise, and that, again, if you have hardware accelerators, that allows you to rip that disk at a factor of, again, 2 to 4 times faster than you could just with Handbrake alone, that's a really, really big deal.
Well, I'm going to use this in my home theater PC, because what I want to do is put in DVDs, copy them to the hard drive so that I can use Front Row or Boxy or whatever I'm using for my home theater interface, XBMC, to play the DVDs off the hard drive. So this is perfect for that.
Right.
It just simplifies that process. I just copy them, basically. Drag and drop them.
Right. Right. Find your copy.
I love that.
Now, what happens if they get sued into the ground and...
They won't. You know why? Well, they're not doing... Are they doing anything?
No, they're...
What they're doing is all the Digital Millennium copyright violations are being done by VLC media players.
That's what I was thinking. VLC does the...
But the fact that they're...
The key is in memory decrypted now, once VLC launches. And now all they're doing is... Well, do they have to decrypt the content?
But when they decrypt it, they're cracking the license.
Typically, now, this has been done before. There's a product for Windows called AnyDVD that works very well
from Slice.
And usually, the way that they get around these restrictions are either by the violation part is sold from a company that's owned by a Belgian holding company, or they simply take the part that violates the copyright and simply moves it into another product that they don't have to care about, like an open source project. It seems to be that this is what they're doing. It's a free open source project. They are saying that the magic stuff that breaks the DVD is not any code that's actually inside their own app, so that if someone tried to come after them, they'd have to be really threatening and really intimidating and really make a very, very good case that this would not be thrown out at the first level. Again, I'm not a lawyer. I'm sure that they've talked to people. Given how good the Metakine website is, I'm guessing this isn't just two guys looking for beer money, especially since they're not charging anything.
Yeah, it's open source. Yeah.
But it looks pretty good. And it does. I can, from a user point of view, I can tell you it works great. Again, I'm sort of now in the process of, well, maybe I'll just rip this later. Maybe I'll convert it to like an iPhone familiar format later. Right now, I just want it on the hard drive so I can access it on the network. And so from that point of view, again, Until the government comes in and breaks into my house and takes it off my hard drive, I'll be a happy Fairmount user.
Love it. Love it, love it, love it. Thank you, Mr. Andy Anatko. Thank you all. Ladies and gentlemen, the show has concluded. You may now resume your life.
Break time is over.
Thank you. Glad you said that. I couldn't remember it.